A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Mick Clifford Podcast of the Irish Examiner. Now, as I'm sure most, if not all of you know by now, Leo Varadkar has resigned as the leader of Fine Gael and will resign as Taoiseach once a new leader for his party has been appointed. I think it's fair to say it was a bombshell, being described widely as a political earthquake, particularly because nobody saw it coming. Joining me to discuss this news, Leo Varadkar's legacy and what we can expect going into the future, is Irish Examiner political editor Elaine Loughlin. Elaine, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Mick.
Elaine, first thing that just strikes me, in our 24-hour media environment, in everything that goes on around politics, this was quite amazingly a well-kept secret, because I think the first sniff I'd suggest anybody had of it was early on Wednesday morning, and really it didn't materialise as such until about an hour before the Taoiseach gave his press conference. One thing out of that I'd first ask you is, do you think it was something that arose for Leo Varadkar after the result of the recent referendum, or is it far more likely it was more longer term in his plans?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose you can't ignore the referendum and the defeat of the government in those two votes, two recent votes. But look, it was probably a part of the whole overall jigsaw, but I think only, as I said, one part of it. The Taoiseach, you have to remember, or outgoing Taoiseach now, shall we say, has been at the helm, or certainly at high level, involved in high level politics since 2011. In recent years, he's been Taoiseach, he's been Taoiseach, he's been Taoiseach again. He's held a number of ministries over the years, including health, a really difficult, tough going ministry, it has to be said, regardless of who you are. And what time you were in it, even going back to Mary Harney. And then, of course, recently we've had a raft of resignations, most recently Kieran Cannon, who announced that he would not be contesting the next general election, literally hours before this bombshell announcement before Leo Varadkar. So I think it's a myriad of things that have all combined. And as he said himself, you know, when it's time to go, it's time to go. And I think perhaps he just was slightly fatigued by it all, and knows that perhaps now is the time for a career change.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, I don't think anybody would dispute that he is certainly a person of very high ability, which isn't necessarily always the case with frontline politicians in this country, and I suppose in a lot of other countries, but there's no question about that, I think it's fair to say. However, would it be fair also, Elaine, to suggest that the main thing he was appointed as leader of Fine Gael to do, which is attract people, particularly who might not be from the base of Fine Gael, to their standard, to be effectively a vote getter, to be what you might call a Bertie Ahern of his day, I think it's fair to say he did not succeed in that respect.
Yeah, and look, he was this big, bright, shining hope after 2017 when he took over. And we remember the shenanigans that were going on with the five-a-side in the months up to his election as leader, when they were trying to oust Enda Kenny, and he really clung on for dear life for a long time, many, many months. And then, of course, he did have that campaign between himself and Simon Coveney, and Leo Varadkar coming out on top as leader of Fine Gael. It was hoped that he would be able to use his popularity, because you have to remember he had a significant honeymoon period when he was first made leader of Fine Gael and was riding high in the polls, and people in the party had hoped that that would transfer to seats. And we saw in the 2020 election, it didn't happen. You had a by-election, it didn't happen. And maybe now, looking towards the Europeans and local elections, and this is all me surmising, Leo Varadkar said, can I deal with another defeat at the polls? Would I be possibly forced out if that happens? And perhaps he was thinking, I'll jump before I'm pushed. And it was interesting, someone today mentioned one of those who is not going to contest the next election is currently a TD, said that the words of Enda Kenny stuck with them, that the best thing you can do in politics is leave on your own terms. And I think Leo Varadkar is doing that.
Yeah, and he also mentioned, he said his reasons were political and personal. And I suppose on the personal front, I have a tiny, tiny insight in that back in 2014, I was reporting on the Maurice McCabe story, Sergeant Maurice McCabe and Garda Corruption. And for whatever reason, not many reporters were doing it at the time. And Leo Varadkar, unusually for somebody in the government, stepped forward at that time. And the Garda Commissioner had suggested that the actions of McCabe and his colleague John Wilson were disgusting. And I think it was a major turning point in that whole story when Leo Varadkar, as Minister for Transport at an event a few months later, said distinguished rather than disgusting was the phrase he would use. Now, I'm not, as you know, Elaine, based in Leinster House, so I'm not on the day-to-day political beat, but Leo Varadkar sent a message to me, said he'd like to meet me just on the basis of the coverage of the McCabe story, and I met him just for a social occasion, a drink, and at that time, and I'm not giving away any secrets here because I think he's expressed it elsewhere, I always remember one thing he said to me, he said, well, I can assure you I won't be in here when I'm 50. And he was then, I suppose, mid-late 30s. So he's always been somebody who has had a wider lens than being focused entirely in terms of a lifetime career in Leinster House. I was just calculating, he's 45 now. If he, the next election, if he goes into that as leader, there's a fair chance perhaps he might end up in opposition. So you're talking about 5 years as an opposition TD. And as Mary Harney famously said on one occasion, the worst day in government is better than the best day in opposition. And you'd have to wonder, is he factoring that into his decision as well?
Of course. And I think it, although Leo Varadkar has been very straight talking, shall we say, although I think he regretted making that public comment. I think it was back in 2015 when he said he wouldn't be in politics by the age of 51. I think he maybe regretted that because for a long time then he was asked, are you getting out of politics? Is now the year? But it goes beyond Leo Varadkar. The demands on politicians now with social media, with a 24/7 news cycle, are immense. And that's even before you get into the sometimes really worrying interactions that they have with protesters, getting death threats. We had even Anne Rabbit famously had excrement thrown at her at a public meeting. And there are security concerns. We had the likes of Holly Cairns as well, who had a stalker incident. So there's a lot of factors that just don't only impose on the politician, but their wider family and friends as well. And it puts a lot of stress and worry onto their wider circle. So I think once you become a politician now, it's not just about you and the long hours that politicians have always put in, but the impact and the stress and the strain it has on those around you. And I think maybe that's what Leo Varadkar was talking about, because he has had protests outside his own personal home. He's had the threats that others have had. And he is a man that is entitled to a private life. And maybe he's seeing that it's not possible when you're Taoiseach of the country.
Yeah, and he kind of made a slightly oblique reference to that in his resignation speech when he suggested that, OK, some people will regret the second stepping down. Others, as he described it, how shall I describe it, will cope with it. And, you know, to be fair to him, I don't think that was a kind of a self-pitying statement or anything, but it was an acknowledgement that there are people out there for whom he became the focus of ire and some appalling abuse and that sort of thing, both because he was the leader of Fine Gael and his personal circumstances and all. And to be fair, you're right, he's put up with an awful lot. Just briefly, Elaine, in terms of his career, he was somebody different. He started out as a kind of a firebrand right winger, certainly in terms of economic stuff. He was very candid in his early incarnation, not so much since he became Taoiseach, but he was, I think it's fair to say, he was a successful politician in a lot of ways.
I think so, and it'll probably take a few years or certainly a few months for people to recognise that and look at him and his career in the whole. He was, you know, over a government that really saw Ireland on the up economically. And I'm sure he will look to measures like the introduction of reduced childcare care fees in this government, his management through COVID, which I suppose none of us really want to talk about, but we did come out fairly well out of COVID when you compare and contrast Ireland and other countries, although to mention the COVID committee, it will be starting its work soon. I'm sure they will pick apart what exactly the government did and what they could have done better in that. But certainly, I think economically, he'll look to his term as successful. The Dublin riots recently, obviously, as the party of law and order, that was a bit of a stain on his copybook. But overall, I think you're probably right. He will have more positives than negatives to look back on.
Yeah, and I think, look, the most dominant political issue is housing, and he shares with his predecessor, Enda Kenny, I think it's fair to say, the responsibility for the scenario whereby we are effectively playing such catch-up now because of over 10 years of largely inaction. And there may be some extenuating circumstances in terms of why that happened, but I think that's definitely there. But the other side of the ledger, when you're talking about serious issues that required great application like Brexit, and you mentioned the pandemic, and it struck me, Elaine, that... You know, the way they talk about lucky generals, in some ways, you could say in the 2020 election, he was unlucky. It was held 2 months before the onset of the pandemic. And yet in the early phase of that pandemic, his approval rating went through the roof, because I think it's acknowledged he handled it extremely well, starting off with that speech in Washington. I think it was following on from the Patrick's Day visit. And ironically, had there been a requirement for an election around June or July that year, he may well have done a hell of a lot better altogether.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't touch on there as well was housing. And that certainly will be something that follows him around like a bad smell even after he departs the Taoiseach's office, because it was, and apologies, I'm in the Dáil today, so the bells, the voting bells are going off, Mick. It's been an absolutely manic day here already. But yes, I think housing is the one issue where he won't be able to claim a victory. Successive governments under his leadership and Enda Kenny have failed to get a grasp on that, and that certainly would be seen as a negative.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Okay, the other thing that I'm always fascinated by in a democracy, far more so than an authoritarian regime or whatever, after he gave his speech, he turned and went in, and you know, he was very understandably emotional, and a few comforting hands went up to his back. But in that very same instant as well, maybe it was just my imagination, but you could see that the power immediately drained from him, and he was surrounded by the leading lights in Fine Gael, and I'm not for a second saying all of them were going to decide to put their names forward, but they were certainly, I'm sure, wondering what it meant for their position, depending on who would put their names forward and that kind of thing. And it's always interesting how quickly, long live the king is dead. In a democracy, the king dies very quickly and all belonging to him and what have you. Okay. The runners and riders in terms of who will succeed him, Elaine.
Yeah, and I think it was that scrum of ministers around him as he made that decision, who will obviously be tipped to take over. You have the likes of Simon Harris, Simon Coveney, Heather Humphreys and Pascal Donoghue, not forgetting Helen McEntee. So it's a large field as of runners and riders at the moment. I would be guessing that Simon Harris would probably be favourite right now. Interestingly enough, though, you can't dismiss Pascal Donoghue, given that there was that rumour around him going to the IMF that now has been dismissed. He's clearly staying in Ireland. So would he want to take over, even in a semi-caretaker capacity, the leadership of Fine Gael? Will he be trying to get ahead of the likes of Simon Harris and possibly Helen McEntee? But one thing you have to take into account is, while they may be leader of Fine Gael, will Fianna Fáil let the next leader become Taoiseach? And it's certainly something that backbench TDs and even pretty senior members of Fianna Fáil have been stating almost immediately after that announcement was made by the Taoiseach. Does this current rotating Taoiseach agreement include any sort of a stipulation or a clause for a Taoiseach stepping down and someone else stepping into their place? And a number of Fianna Fáil TDs were saying to me that Micheál Martin, unlike whoever takes over from Leo Varadkar, has a proven track record. People know that he is able to run the country. He was a good performer as Taoiseach, and maybe he should go straight back in, and it shouldn't be handed over to whoever becomes the Fine Gael leader.
There's very little hope of that. I mean, for that, whomever becomes the Fine Gael leader would have to nearly take a back seat as opposed to the leading platform approaching the next general election. And as things stand, they're going to have a very shortish run in, even if it goes on for the next 10, 11 months. But, well, that's my amateur opinion. But do you think that's any way a runner beyond fellas throwing shapes?
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I don't think any Fine Gael leader would be happy to come in as second fiddle. It wouldn't be a great start to your leadership if you have to give over the real leadership, that of the Taoiseach's office, to Fianna Fáil. So it may be just people talking in the background, trying to maybe push that agenda and push their party. But certainly it's been spoken about around Leinster House.
Okay, and just initially, two of the candidates, just to have a quick look at them, Simon Harris and Pascal Donoghue. It would strike me that, depending on who, if it was to be one of those two, the kind of thing you're looking at is, on one hand, Pascal Donoghue, I think he's somebody people trust. He's very articulate, he's very calm, measured, obviously very good on the economy. He's Dublin based. Harris is Wicklow, so I suppose it isn't the greater Dublin area, but he is that kind of thing. And then you've Simon Harris, who is, well, you could in some ways suggest a bit like young fella called Leo Varadkar, who came on the scene about 14, 15 years ago. He's young, he's Duracell bunny, he's full of energy, he's got ideas, very articulate. And I wonder, Elaine, is it going to feed in to the Fine Gael membership and the elected representatives who elect the leader, which of them they think is more likely to be the best vote getter? And let's face it, in terms of the most immediate predecessor, their record in that respect wasn't great.
Yeah, and look, they're both very different offerings. I think what we can be probably certain about now is that the timing of the election has been altered as a result of the departure of Leo Varadkar, the announcement that he is going to depart. Because for a long, long time now, we had all been stating that it would be an autumn election, that perhaps the government would have one last budget in them and then would run for the hills and would go to the electorate. I'm not sure whether a new leader would want to be going to the polls almost immediately after coming into office. They'd want to give themselves time to bed in, to make a mark, and then go to the country. So you'd imagine that the timeline for an election now could be extended out. maybe even as far as March, and that's the deadline that this government have, that that would be their full term. And before now, Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan, the obviously the two coalition partners, had been saying, and they'd been sticking with the line, that they wanted to see this term go to the very end. So Leo Varadkar's departure may actually grant them their wish in staying for the full term.
Okay, and just back again to who might succeed Leo Varadkar. He made a point of noting, and it's very practical, both in terms of the upcoming European and local elections, and in terms of just how tight the whole thing is, that he foresaw that the leadership contest could begin, and I think it's around the 18th of April, he suggested, might be completed by. Now, their process is, as I understand it, you have the three constituencies, the Oireachtas members, the elected members, including councillors, and then the membership in terms of selecting the leader. Aren't they going to go through all of that? Because it would strike me as being very tight to try and get a leader in terms of that kind of timeline.
Look, it's a pressurised timeline, all right, but the sooner Fine Gael do it, the better, because as you said, they do have those local and European elections coming up. And in the meantime, while the senior party members, we can only assume, are looking to get that top position within the party, they will be going out canvassing for themselves. So they won't be probably as focused on the locals and Europeans and perhaps going out canvassing with a local candidate that is really beneficial and seen as a real coup for a local candidate to get a minister or a Taoiseach out into their constituency to do a few hours canvassing ahead of a local election. So people are going to be distracted. And in that time, you can imagine the other main parties won't be distracted. They'll be out canvassing. They'll be, you know, hitting the doors on the ground, focusing on those local and European elections. So it definitely does leave, especially the European candidates, on the back foot, I think, while this other campaign is going on.
And do you envisage any scenario with hustings and that kind of thing?
You'd imagine so, Mick. Again, we probably will be going with the 2017 regime, where there were hustings and where it was a relatively tight campaign as well between Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar. So I think you'll definitely see that. You'll see plenty of debate. Again, will, given the timeline and the sensitivity of upcoming elections at European and local level, will people be asked, if they do stand, to maybe stand aside and let one person just take over? Or will they allow for a contest? We'll probably see that in the coming days when people state their intentions or their ambitions. Obviously, the cleanest route would be for one person to put their name forward and that be the only person. So effectively, it's a straightforward transition, and you don't have, as we saw last time, people siding with one candidate or the other within the parliamentary party, and then it kind of creating tiny splits within the party that we did see, as I said, with the Coveney versus Varadkar campaign. But again, that will all play out in the days ahead.
Small bit of crystal ball gazing. In your opinion, opposition parties, and particularly, I suppose, Sinn Féin, will they welcome the fact that their opponent won't be Leo Varadkar, or would they prefer if he were still in place?
I think they'll definitely welcome that there's a campaign underway now, because it's uncertainty within Fine Gael. So both, I think, Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin will welcome that, because it obviously takes their eye off the ball in other fields. It all depends who's elected and how much time they have, again, to, as I said, to get in behind the Taoiseach's chair and make a difference and make an impression, or what impression is made. I think if there is a long lead in time to that election, you would imagine whoever becomes leader will have that scope to bed in. And just like we saw in 2017 with Leo Varadkar, he did have a significant honeymoon period where he was riding high in the polls. We saw it as well, to a lesser extent, with Holly Cairns and the Holly mania there was with a new leader. So there always is a bit of a buzz when there's a change at the top of any party. So I think the new party leader, whoever that may be, will be looking to take advantage of that. But in the meantime, I think certainly in the short term, other political parties will be fairly happy that there is this uncertainty within Fine Gael.
Yeah, very true. And I'd just like to say, I suppose, as well, before we finish, in fairness, another aspect to Leo Varadkar's career was the fact that he announced that he was gay in 2015, I think a few months ahead of the marriage equality referendum. And, you know, to have been involved in public life and effectively carrying a secret must have been very tough. And I think he probably did an awful lot of good, particularly for younger people, who anyone who's struggling with their sexuality and society and that kind of thing. And he definitely opened the way there. And I think he made a big contribution in that respect in terms of public life. And for politicians, I think he deserves credit there. And I think overall, he's been certainly interesting, Elaine. He hasn't been your traditional politician, And I think he went on his own journey. He went from that right-wing firebrand. And some people might suggest Fine Gael are very centrist. And even in some instances, because the way politics has swung in this country in general, even slightly to the left in European terms. So he travelled a fair bit of road himself, and he did all right.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a different politician now than he was when he even started off in Leinster House. And actually, going back to legacy, we didn't touch on it, but I think it's important that it's raised. The repeal of the 8th referendum as well was historic, and it was under his leadership that change to the constitution was made, and as you mentioned as well, marriage equality during his lifetime in government. So they are two really big changes to Irish society that I think he can claim at least a little bit of the credit for, and I think that the history books will certainly be writing down when they are analysing his term in office.
Elaine Loughlin, thank you very much at such short notice and on such a busy period, as it will be over the coming weeks, I'm sure, keeping up with the election of a new Fine Gaeler. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Mick.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.